This is the time for the public hearing, and let me first give everyone the ground rules, so to speak. When council holds public hearing on ordinances or code amendments, they are legislative hearings because the council uses the information obtained during the hearing to decide whether to adopt or amend the ordinance. Sussex County, in its legislative deliberations, does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, sex, creed, marital status, age, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias or stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by council in its deliberation. Each proposed ordinance or amendment shall be announced. If it is a zoning ordinance, the director or assistant county attorney will review with council the minutes and testimony from the planning and zoning hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at planning and zoning and any recommendations made by the commission. The council may pose questions during the presentation by the director or assistant county attorney. After the information has been presented, council will provide an opportunity for anyone who favors or opposes the application to speak. The persons who speak will be allowed to state their reasons for their opposition or support, and again, council may ask questions. If you intend to speak, you should come to the front and stand at the speaker's stand and state your name and home address before you make a statement. There is a sheet at the stand. We ask that you sign that. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who it is you represent. And when you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself, and if you have a written statement, I would ask that you hand it to me and it will be made part of the record. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please turn that off or switch it to silent service. And at the conclusion of the hearing, council will either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. Now, this is the time for the public hearing on an ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Article 1, by amending the definitions of dwelling, dwelling single family, dwelling multifamily, and family. And Mr. Vincent, we have Mr. Lank and Mr. Robertson, who will present the information on behalf of the county.
Good morning. For the record, the Planning and Zoning Commission held public hearing on this application on August 7th, 2014. Before you have a copy of a report that was in the packet for today. The commission, during the commission public hearing, Mr. Robertson summarized and presented substantial information about the proposed definition changes. The commission discussed the proposed amendments. There was one party present, James Truett Jr., was present in opposition to the proposed ordinance amendment. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed the amendment and did defer action for further consideration. On August 21st, 2014, the commission discussed this amendment again under old business. Mr. Robertson advised the commission that since this amendment is an important issue, it should be voted by all members of the commission. We did have party absent. The commission did again defer action for further consideration. On September 11, 2014, the commission discussed this amendment under old business. Mr. Robertson advised the commission that the ordinance amendment was reviewed several weeks ago through public hearing and that some concerns were expressed about foster children, and added that foster children are already governed by state codes, and that a need exists for the commission to take action on this ordinance so that the council can proceed with a public hearing this year. At the request of the commission, Mr. Robertson read a suggested motion stating that The commission recommends that the ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Article 1, amending the definition of dwelling, dwelling single-family, dwelling multifamily, and family be approved. Therefore, there was a motion by Mr. Smith, seconded by Mr. Burton, and carried unanimously to forward this ordinance amendment to council with a recommendation that the ordinance amendment be approved as circulated. And that motion did carry 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll refer to Mr. Robertson.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning. Extend from what Mr. Lang stated, this was a collaborative effort that it had its start in several different points in the county. There were sort of two things that got us looking at the definitions. One was the recent campground applications, which pointed out what was a distinction in the code between manufactured homes and dwellings about separation distances in campgrounds. There's a 400-foot separation requirement between a campground and a dwelling, and in the old definition of dwelling, manufactured homes were not considered dwellings. So that was sort of one part of where this started. The second part was reviewing state and federal law about what a dwelling means or is defined as under state and federal law. And certainly we received directives from HUD and others about fair housing, including the recent fair housing training that the counties participated in. The ordinance was drafted with the participation of many people. Certainly I took the lead in drafting it. Mr. Moore and Mr. Sharp also were involved in it. Mr. Sharp took an interest in it just because he deals with some of these things at the Board of Adjustment level.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Hansen was also involved in the drafting because she was the primary lead attorney on the issues with HUD that we recently went through and the consent decree. Ms. Nauman and Mr. Whaley from our Community Development Office were also involved, and we ran it by the Delaware State Housing Authority and the Office of State Planning Coordination before it was introduced at Council and the public hearing occurred at Planning and Zoning. Both of those agencies commended our efforts in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, the language before you is based on federal law for the definition of dwelling and state law for some of the groups that can reside in a dwelling. That being said, one of the things that we needed to do was try to go back through our entire code and make sure that by changing this, we weren't creating some unintended consequence down the line. And again, that's one of the things that I've done, and Mr. Sharp has also been real helpful in reviewing it just to get another set of eyes on it. At the outset, and because I understand that for the past several months there's been a great deal of interest and inquiry, this amendment brings manufactured homes back into the definition of dwelling. So putting that into the context of campgrounds, this means that in future campground applications, conditional use applications, the campsites must be 400 feet from the nearest dwelling, whether it's a stick-built home, a barracks-style home, or a single-wide or a double-wide-styled manufactured home.
Future.
Yes, future, because this would be an ordinance change, so the ordinance couldn't
apply. Nothing pending.
No, because, again, those hearings occurred under the prior code. So. Again, the definition of dwellings based on federal law, and that's included in the consent decree that the county agreed upon. So for zoning purposes, the term family has given way to a different definition of who can live together in a dwelling. As a result, the amendment takes the separate definition of family out of the zoning code and basically just simply states who can live in a dwelling as follows. So just going through the list real quick, it's one or two people related by blood or marriage with any number of their children, and children is natural, foster, or stepchildren. It's two single parents or guardians with any number of their children, again, natural, foster, or step. It's a group of no more than four unrelated people. It's a group residential facility licensed by the state of Delaware serving 10 or fewer individuals with disabilities on a 24-hour basis, and it relates back to the definition of disability that exists under state law. And then one or two elderly or disabled persons who own a dwelling, plus one or two people related by blood or marriage and their children. So then when you tie that into a dwelling single family, it'd be one of those groups, and if it's a multifamily dwelling, it's two or more of those groups, which is the same as the way our code currently works. And I thought it would be helpful just to give some context on this, the differences between what's currently in our code and what's proposed under this ordinance, and really the changes aren't that significant. Under our code currently, it says that a family is defined as one or two people by living together and related by blood or marriage. It really doesn't reference their children. Under the new code, or the new ordinance, It's, again, one or two people related by blood or marriage and their kids. So that brings in the children, and it talks about foster, step, or adopted. A new provision that wasn't in the old ordinance is two single parents or guardians with their kids, again, foster, step, or children. So if you have two people that are living together that aren't related by blood or marriage, they're entitled to have one single housekeeping unit or live in a single family dwelling. The old had 400 unrelated people. The proposed new ordinance still has four unrelated people. So that's not changed. Under the old code, there was not a provision for group residential facilities, as I mentioned, for 10 or few people with disabilities. However, Title 22 of the Delaware Code mandates that. So the fact that our code didn't state it, state law still required it. So really, that's not a change in the law. It's just making our code consistent with what's already in state law. And the final one is just the ability for, again, one to two people related by blood or marriage living with an elderly or disabled adult. You know, that would be the situation where you have people moving in back in, you know, for example, with mom or dad to take care of them as they get older. So, you know, that's where that is. So it's not, when you break down the new ordinance, it's not a great deal of difference from, at least in my opinion, from what was in the original code. It just clarifies more clearly, you know, that children are allowed to live in the home of their parents, obviously. It also clearly states that foster, stepchildren, and adopted children all fall under the category of who can live in a home together. There was a question by Mr. Truitt, who I believe is here today, about foster children and the number of children that could reside in a home as foster children. And we actually went back and looked at that with Ms. Hansen. And as was pointed out at Planning and Zoning, the foster child program, that's regulated by the state of Delaware. So they're doing investigations, and there's you know, guidelines in place for how many foster children any one you know, parent or family can have. And the other thing is that under state law, foster children are already considered legally children anyhow. So there's not a distinction between foster children, stepchildren, or adopted children, or natural-born children under the eyes of the law. So with that, we think that this brings Sussex County up to date with regard to what the federal and state law requirements are, and it implements what the county was required to do under that consent decree that we entered into with HUD.
Mm-hmm. Does foster children, is that defined somewhere?
It is, Ms.
So
Deaver.
If, say, some grandmothers, you know, had to adopt some kids and in the neighborhood, and wouldn't be related maybe to her at all, but she's raising them. I mean, does that
well? There's a couple ways that that's dealt with. One is legally through the guardianship.
Not their grandmother, but uh-huh.
Right. There's a guardianship process, or there's a foster child program that's under Title VI of the Delaware Code. So, and getting a little bit far afield on that, there's other things that come into play. You know. Certainly somebody who was doing that should pursue one of those two avenues just to deal with schools and having legal authority to take action on their behalf.
Yeah, well, if they apply for aid, I think they probably would have to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cole? Is everything now that you've just stated, is with the changes, these new suggestions, are they all required by state and federal law? Or do we have any wiggle room, in your opinion, in our interpretation because of my recollection that we had that controversial housing code, which required different things about houses, and that was state, you know, at refrigerators and number of people living in rooms and in size like that. So is there a conflict with, you know, when it looks like there's no limit on the number of people can live in a house? I mean, we always have had limits with septic, number of bedrooms and, you know, size of house. And so, is there any wiggle room, is my question, on what you've just stated and what P&Z is recommending?
Wiggle room in terms of that we don't have to do it. That we don't have to do it.
Oh. Or is there something we've included in this, Vince, that is
well, I would say
subject to maybe interpretation at the local level here.
Going through the comparison, certainly a lot of it is what we already have. So if you take that out, you know, it
well, how about like private deed restrictions?
Now, private deed restrictions, if you have a development, you know, an existing one, or you want to establish a new one, you can be, as long as you're within the law, and if you're a new developer, I would certainly say that you need to talk to your own attorney so that you're not embroiled in a housing discrimination case, but if you're the developer. But you can be more restrictive, or you can require sizes of homes and those restrictive covenants and things like that. I just don't want to give the impression to some developer that they can do whatever they want because they're governed by the same laws we are as far as fair housing. So,
but a group home now, all of a sudden now, a group home seems to be a family, right?
Right.
Now we've had a conditional use, right? Isn't it with a conditional use for group homes? Is that how we used to do it?
We have, right? In the past.
Well, that would be four people, no more than four, right?
Well, the definition of a family basically is what we consider as four unrelated people based on our code.
A group home is
and
that
then
a
the definition
home?
Of, as Ben stated earlier, there, by blood or marriage, there was no limit on numbers.
Right. No limit?
No. Not by blood or marriage. They're related. Yeah. So
we have a limit, I believe. Yeah.
You can't require them to just have four. It doesn't happen.
The problem we would run into, Mr. Cole, I think, is if the county were to deny a group residential facility as defined in state law, it would set us up for liability for somebody to say that the county didn't follow the state law. So, I mean, it's already there, and this just brings our code into compliance with it. So to answer your question, I don't think we have wiggle room on that. I mean, you could say we have wiggle room, but then we just
And a group home could be one individual with people who had, say, drug problems or alcohol problems or marital problems or whatever.
Well, no, it's a group. It is defined because it has to be a group residential facility licensed by the state of Delaware,
yeah,
for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
10 or fewer people with disabilities. And the disability term is something that specifically is defined under state law and the ordinance.
That's pretty broad, too, nowadays. That's pretty much anybody.
So we couldn't
under Chapter 46. It's actually a definition.
I got married. I feel like I got a disability sometime.
Mr. Call, state, if you have a conflict between state law and county ordinance, state law supersedes the county.
All the time.
That's
okay, great. But so I'm trying to just find out, David, with what we're hearing today, what kind of wiggle room do we have on going with this? Because we have septic issues. We're a rural county with a lot of communities out there that, group home would be very disruptive, possibly.
Well,
you're saying we can't deny anybody a group home?
You can't deny it on the basis of the fact that there may be 10 people who are in a group home there, but they would have to also comply with, building code, septics, and so forth.
Who enforces that if 10 people end up in a house?
Well, in the
septic system,
that would be DENREC.
Would
enforce that.
Complaint would have to be made to DENREC.
Or they wouldn't get their septic permit if they were, building.
It's new.
Yeah, that's right.
Existing, what about existing? Is this a new ordinance? So anything existing is grandfathered in under the old, but where group homes aren't permitted? That's a good question.
No, I think if it was an existing community under this, they would fall under the definition of a single-family dwelling, so they could do
it. We adopt this. Everybody, everything in the county is under this.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
So that home that was proposed for female veterans who needed some sort of rehab up in Milford, could that have been denied? I think I'm trying to think whether it was a conditional use. I believe it was a conditional use.
That was a Board of Adjustment, right?
What's that?
Board of Adjustment,
a variance.
But it was denied, wasn't it? And they didn't take it.
Well, and the difference I wasn't involved in that, but maybe what a trigger was whether they fell under the definition of disability, or maybe it was more than 10 people. There could have been any number of variables. So
okay.
I just don't know. I wasn't involved with the Board of Adjustment.
Okay, just, all right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Question to council?
So we are limited to 10 people?
Yes.
Okay.
Like I said, there's several limitations. It can't be somebody that just says, I want to open a group home. It has to be licensed, first of all, by the state of Delaware. It's 10 people, and then under the definition of
disability. We're not limited if they're natural born.
No, absolutely not.
And if they're adopted, we're not limited.
No, and it reads natural children, foster,
step,
and adopted.
I think you made a statement. There's no difference between foster children or children that's taken in than an adopted child.
Now, my statement was under the law, there's no difference between a natural child, a foster child, stepchildren, adopted children in terms of being treated as children. And I, like I said, we asked Ms. Hansen to look at that specifically because that question came up.
Well, they all four are falling in the same category, yeah. I understand. Yeah. Okay.
But if somebody did exceed the number of people in a house or that exceeded the septic regulations, does Department of Natural Resources ever tell people then you got too many people and you got to pick out a few and get rid of them? I mean, how does that work?
That's a question I don't know the answer to.
I mean, who picks the ones that
there's a permit issued, so I suppose the Department of Natural Resources could threaten to revoke that permit. Whether they've done that or not, I don't know.
We've had students pile into homes over on our side. Yeah. Lots of them.
It just seems that it's very worrisome about some of the potential hazards that are coming from this term family nowadays.
Well, really, in terms of that, it strikes me that the biggest change in terms of maybe numbers of people would be the group residential facility, only because the other ones are very similar to what we have currently. Mm-hmm. You know, again, with the 1 to 2 people related by blood or marriage, that's the same. We've really only added that to 2 single parents and their children. So that's theoretically the same number of people. 4 unrelated people is the same. You know, and the elderly, disabled, or disabled person with their family is really not that much of a change. It's mainly the group residential.
So. Okay, I got one more question. I guess just to pop my mind, Lawrence. If somebody in an existing community came in and started a group home, we don't need to be notified anymore.
The state would have
that way.
Approve.
I mean, they get a license. They go get a license from whatever agency.
Get a license from the state.
Mm-hmm. To who?
For that purpose.
To the county.
No, I mean,
the state first. State they'd have first. To obtain the
license. Okay, they have a license. Somebody buys a house or rents a house or something like that, and they move in. They don't contact any county officials when they do that. Mm-hmm. Would I rent a house to somebody?
We wouldn't be aware of it unless there was someone.
A complaint. Now, so the
situation, because it would be, they just moved in and started occupying with more residents.
So the only people that really know where group homes are, if there's a list somewhere, that would be some state agency that gives licenses, or is there anybody who monitors?
The neighbors.
We don't have a list, but I'm sure the state does, at least a portion of mm-hmm. that they've approved, not saying they're drawing up.
Is it possible to do some regulations here where somehow still group homes are permitted, but somehow we get notified, we're aware of it, or there's some little special step? Because a group home just doesn't, in my illogical framed mind, I can't picture that as being a true family. I just don't see that as meeting any kind of definition of a family. Where
well, and that's why when you start looking at fair housing, you know, the definition of family is not as important in zoning as it is for just groups of who can reside in a dwelling.
Much more inclusive.
Then you get into the issue of, you know, people with disabilities are protected class, so you cannot treat them.
There's no wiggle room there.
You know, so that's where, as Ms. Deaver said, there's really not a lot of wiggle room on that.
Yep.
And so if we start adding back in more regulations against people with disabilities, mm-hmm. then we
so Kent County can't deny, based on what you were telling us, if it's not in their code, they can't.
Well,
they can't.
It's, as I said, it's state law. If it falls under what the state law said, and this is we tracked it right from what state law
other
says.
States, the other states. Regulated differently, or are we all under the state?
Well, we're all under the federal fair housing requirements, mm-hmm. so you know they
no
may not
you,
be.
No
the,
matter where you go
in the United States, yes. And would they have the same as what's in Delaware state law? I don't know, but you know it's going to be something similar because they're all under the umbrella of federal law anyway.
I don't see anything wrong with it.
Any more questions, Council?
Because you're a Democrat.
Because I'm a Democrat.
any other questions from Council of these gentlemen?
No, okay. I just was remarking I couldn't see any objection to it.
Okay.
And we do comply with fair housing.
Okay. Now, we're still in the public hearing.
I'm just commenting. I'm not giving a vote. No.
Is there anyone here who wishes to speak in favor of this proposed ordinance amendment?
You gonna mess up?
Seeing none, is there anyone here who wishes to speak in opposition to the ordinance amendment? Sir, will you come up and say your name?
Okay, my name is James S. Truitt, Jr. from Rehoboth. I spoke in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission, and I've done a lot of work on this thing because I'm speaking with two hats on. One is my personal home at 123 Kingsbridge Road, Rehoboth Beach Yacht and Country Club, and the other one is my 40-acre mobile home park in Rehoboth, Silverview Farm. How this law I see affecting this, which everybody seems to want to say. George asked a lot of the important questions. We're just doing this because it's the law. So who is the law? I mean, did our legislators put this through? Who put this through? But I know why it's all happened. It's all happened because of the VCA. All five of you. The VCA.
What's that stand for?
The Voluntary Compliance Agreement. This is what it all came from. This is the originating of it. So if you all, you've all been to all the meetings and all this, so under Roman numeral 3 in that agreement, there's corrective actions. And you go to number 7. And it's predicated on an analysis of impediments by Sussex County to review and evaluate development of fair housing to address the impediments of the studies that were done in 1998, 2003, and 2011. I understand from the Newman, who is your office of, I guess, housing here in the county. University of Delaware did some of this. She didn't know who did what, when, but it's based on that. Because we have to comply with this from the settlement of the VCA, which you're all aware of that. And but what I seem to think is there's some negotiation, mediation, middle ground to what's going on here with this definition. I have no problem at all with the definition of dwelling as far as a mobile home park and that. I think that should be just a separate ordinance one in itself. And then another ordinance should be here on the single family and multifamily. I think that should be, you know, I don't see any problem with putting the dwelling thing through, putting an ordinance on that. But I think this thing, when I've seen people that's been involved in it, and it's just been like Vince Robertson to Shane Abbott to Newman to the Hansen lawyer that the county contracted, and all this, and they've come up with this definition. Well, here's some of the problems I see with it. George hit on some of them. And you say, well, Mr. Truitt, you know, as Bob Wheatley told me, he said, Mr. Truitt, this is nothing. Don't even worry about it. I said, well, wait a minute. I don't have to worry about it in my park or my house or anything. It's just all fine. And if there's, it causes problems in there, I don't have to worry about it. And he says, absolutely. The county just has to get this done, and then it's up to you what you do. The state will come after you or the federal government or whoever. I said, gee whiz. So with the problems, I see it with the foster children. Now, we talked about that a little bit. And with the foster children, all these children that's coming over the border now, you hear about them, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, so many to Delaware, so many to Cape Ann Lopen School, so many in your river. We see all this, all these children coming. Well, if the federal government lets them come, continues to come, and keeps our borders open, Sussex County, right here where we all live, and I was born here in 1939. I'm 75 years old. I've seen this. I've been in business here. I've made my living here. I know what quality of life is. I have a quality of life for my manufactured home community. It's probably one of the best in the county. And that's the way I want to leave here, with it being that way. And I see, because we have state law, federal law, that's what everybody keeps coming back to, I see my community, where I live, Rehoboth Beach Yacht and Country Club, for my generation, I mean for after my generation, my children, my grandchildren, my son that's going to hopefully have my community. These people coming in pockets in these subdivisions or mobile home parks. Well, when they come in, what happens? You got all these people. First of all, the way you all have approved the subdivisions and you've done all this, you've got them 2 per acre, 4 per acre. You got them 12 in the commercial. You've approved all this stuff, and your predecessors have. So the way that's all done, it's meant for so many people to live in a place. So take yourself, if you know, you live out on a farm like Sam does, and where I grew up on a farm as a boy here in Rehoboth, you got no problem. But when you live in a country club, when you got 100-foot lots, you got 60-foot lots in my mobile home park, which is the biggest there are around. Go to Sierra, where they're 40s and 30s and all that. Now, you bring in these mobile home parks, the big question is if they have sewer and if they don't have sewer. Okay, all these parks don't have sewer. So you guys represent this whole county, Sussex County. So I'm sure you can think out in your county where you have mobile home parks that are on septic systems. They may be, if two or more homes are on a piece of ground, they're considered a community, and they're under the state law, Chapter 70 of the Landlord-Tenant Act. So if these people, if a lot of people, in other words, I know you're politically correct, I understand you're not supposed to use the word these people or those people, and to me, it's just plain rhetoric, and I wasn't raised that way. You can call a spade a spade. But this whole thing here with the VCA came up because I understand those people. That's what Brandy Newman told me. That's the thing that ruffled and it got to the federal level. But you get these people, meaning a lot of people. I'm not talking about minorities. I'm going to make myself clear. You get a lot of people in a home. It used to be when I was on septic in Silverview Farm, there were 2 per bedroom. You had a 14 by 60 put in, and there were 2 bedrooms, 2 baths, or 1.5 bath. 4 people is what went in there because of the way the septic was. That's the way Denrec designed it. Now, all out in your areas where you have mobile home parks and they have septics, now they allow these people to come in. Of course, this is state law now. You know, we can't do anything because state is over our back, which we ought to do something about that if it's that strong and that. I can't believe that it is. Then you can have a group of people in there. And you've got a problem with the children. You don't have the width of the lots. You got little 20-foot wide streets in Sierra down there. A lot of these communities have little streets. Mine are 50-foot. Mine are built just like a subdivision. I didn't get greedy. I laid mine out because I knew I was going to have septic system for I don't know how many years, and I had the spare beds and all that. These other guys may not have that, and gals that have these parks. So then when you get all these people in here, they got to flush, they got to shower, they got to bathe, they got to brush their teeth. And when they do, the water has to go somewhere. So they come in there and they do it, and they say, well, the agency's going to check to see if that's okay or they're going to deny it. We don't really know that. And then there's water on top of the ground. So what do you do next, Joan? Who you call? Water's on top of the ground. Board of Health. Mosquitoes. Bacteria. Ebola. All this stuff. Oh, man, let's do something. So when you have all these people living together in something that has not been laid out by previous councils and everything. It wasn't meant to be this way. And then you get over into my country club. You know, I got 100-foot wide by 120 deep, and that's the way the bulk Rehoboth Country Club is. So somebody comes next to me, and they have one of these groups or one of these families in there, and then I die, and my kids want to sell my house. Oh, my. That's like living next to Bob Woolgar. I don't want to live there. So that part of the Rehoboth Country Club becomes a bad pocket. So what have we had, Vance? A taking of our land. What we went in there, and I bought that land in 1978. And I bought that lot on Ball Eagle Lagoon. The restrictions were on there by Great South Beach. Jay Wingate was the run of the community. That's what I expected when I built my house there in 2000 to be governed under. And I understand that whatever county setbacks are, you have to have as a minimum when I built that house. But our homeowners association at 278 lots can have more strict. But what happens now, we could have in our and our rules and our restrictions that we have recorded in the courthouse here, we could have those recorded, and then what we planned, what we bought there 4 years ago, and what we expected to get, the benefit for the hard money that I've worked for all my life. And then they say, oh my God, these people come in because we got to be, you know, they got to come in here. And, you know, not all homes in the country club are worth $1 million. There's a lot of them worth $300,000. Kinsale Glen next to my Silverview Farm, $300,000, $400,000 from the depression we just went through. They're coming back a little bit. But people can get into these. Now, you take it a step further. This thing is going to be, they want us to put it through for the county, the government, the state, the federal government. Now, who's going to put it through for the city of Rehoboth? Who's going to put it through for the city of Lewis? Who's going to put it through for Bethany Beach? Who's going to put it through for Kent County, which doesn't have it right now? But have they singled you folks out here because you said those people? That's exactly. We all five of you there know that's why it's happened. You know that. I want the real story to get out. And they took the $750,000 to $800,000 from, I can't find out, from the insurance company, or from the county, my tax money. But my tax money and your tax money is going to pay for it anyway because the insurance is going to go up. You're not going to have it being by stupid enough to sell you insurance cheaper and do that. So we're into this mess, and this council here should cure this problem. And what needs to be done to, I mean, it, you know, you talk about the problems. There's, just think about traffic, developments that school buses come into, and all these people. The traffic, if you, you have a disabled home. They're meant to be really in a commercial area, like Peachtree is out on Route 9, or zoned so you can have it out there. This is invading all the work that all the councils have done with housing. Because the government says, thou shalt do it. Now, you all say, well, Mr. Truitt, what do you want us to do? You want us to appeal this to the Supreme Court of the United States and spend your money? Or you just want to let this go through and handle it on a case-by-case basis? We got no money to enforce it, like we don't rooming houses. We don't do that. We got them right over in Rehoboth Beach Country Club, rooming houses in summer with Wohar. Vince Roberson won't touch it. Lawrence Lank won't touch it because they send the sheriff there. He gets up to the front door, and Wohar says, don't go any further than that. He's a disbarred attorney, if you know him. You all know him. They can't go any further. So the only way you can do is get the state police there and get an order from a judge to go in to see how that house is divided up with all those kids you see there for about 7 or 8 months. I got that right around the corner from me. So believe me, guys and gals, I know what this is about. I live with one house like this. Now, with what this is going to do, there's going to be more of it. So our communities are going to go down. Our investment in our houses in certain pockets in those communities is going to go down. And all over Sussex County, the people you regulate. And guess what? Unless they get caught in a deal like you did, they got you with a double-barrel shotgun. They shot you with the $800,000, and then they shot you with a VCA and all that, and they're sending you all to school for 4 years, everybody and his brother, and they're educating you. Because thou shalt do this. This is America. Isn't this something? And this all comes down to this deal here. And there's got to be something done about this. I mean, when you think about traffic, children's safety, size of streets, failing septic systems where there is no septic. Are you working on a septic system right there? Just think, the bulk, I wish Mike Gizzo was here. I'd just like to know how many homes in this county don't have central sewer. It's the bulk of them. You ride out on all these roads and look all around these little strip places the farmers have cut off the front and got all their kids there. They're all on septic. So there's a lot of problems here, and, you know, this has come through, and what I can't understand is why the Board of Health and why the DENREC hasn't jumped into this thing somewhere along the line if it got up in Dover in legislature. I just can't believe that they can push this on us. Down from a Holder, right at the top, at the Attorney General's office. It came right from there, down to these liberal courts, right down to this, because we're going to take care of these people, because people under your jurisdiction said, hey, we don't want those people for you guys to do that, and you backed up what the people in this room sat here and said. And then you had a bunch of, you had people come in here and rake the county off, just like Jesse Jackson does, blazing the street, Al Sharpton. You all got robbed. I asked somebody the other day, where is the, what is it called, the Sussex County Land Trust now? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. The money's gone. They've been paid. Nobody knows anything about it.
It's alive and well. Thank you.
It is. Where have they built?
I think you've got the wrong organization. It's the...
First State.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay.
State Land Trust. Two different organizations.
Yeah. First State. What is the correct name of it? First State. Here it is. Diamond State Community Land Trust.
There you go.
That's who's on the front page of the VCA. That agreement is between them, Sussex County, and HUD. I got the copy of it right here. So this is what this is all coming from. And if they're not doing it in all the municipalities, they're not doing it in my county that's as big as the whole state of Delaware and Florida, Brevard County. They're not doing it down there on the East Coast, not Broward, but Brevard, up where the Space Center is. If they're not doing it there, and they're not doing it all over the country, see what they've done to you people?
You people don't use that word.
Yeah. Oh, I will. I will. The only way they'll stop me is put me in jail. And guess what, George? Then they'll shut my mouth. But, I mean, I know what's going on. And this is what's going on and what you five people have to really listen to and see the effects of this. And like George said there, do we have any wiggle room? Vince says no. You know what I ask all five of you to please do? Hire a lawyer different than you've used now, other than Hanson, and it costs money. And I know we always talk about money here and that, but let me tell you, what the county does and our taxes is dirt cheap. They're coming in our area down here by the droves. The Shell brothers are just building hundreds of houses. Just look all around what's going on. We got all these people moving in here because we have reasonable taxes. The highest thing we got in that is the school tax. And mine is the highest in the whole Sussex County. Now, Cape used to be the least. We have the less, but that's the equalization formula. But what's going on here is all these problems that will be caused from we the people that had restrictions, bought land, we thought we were building where we were building, and this is what we had, and now they're going to tell us that they're going to come over here and do that. And this is America? United States of America? I'm going to use my pen and my pencil. I'm going to tell you, that's it. So I'd get somebody to check into that to see how that all came about and how that is, and then if it is that way, they're discriminating against 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the state of Delaware, against all five of you and all of Sussex County. You know why they're discriminating against you? Because they're making you do something that every other county in the country doesn't have to do, every municipality doesn't have to do, all of them. They've shot you with the second barrel of the shotgun. They got it right on you. And I talked to Newman, Brandy, and I said, you're not a lawyer, but do you think there's any way, there's any room for here for just what George said, any amendment that could be made to this or a rechange of this? She says, well, I'm not a lawyer, but I think it could be changed. So what I would, I'm up here telling you what I think. Now you're saying, Truitt, what do we do? What do you recommend we do? You got to have a solution. When I worked for Acme Markets for 26 years, I took the little store here in Georgetown, and I had an old-timer come in. You know what he said to me? I said, I can't make it. We're going to have to close the store. He said, Jim Truitt, you can make money in that little Georgetown store. All you got to do is use your brain. You're blocked in your brain. You've run out of ideas. I says, well, if you can do that, come down here and show me. The guy come down. He spent 3 weeks there. He put higher shelves in, did this, put different gross items in, and guess what? The store stayed open for another 10 years. I was wrong. So what I'm saying here, here's something here. I'm going to give you a solution. Grandfather everything in Sussex County that's here, now, recorded. every lot that's out there, grandfather it in to the old thing. If they want this, put this into every new subdivision, mobile home park, whatever you do, put it into that, and then you're going to have to think about the people of Sussex County through planning and zoning and resurrect what you put on this land. Because I'll tell you a little story. This will hit you home. I'm not trying to take your time, but my daughter bought a new condo in Milford on Brown P. Thawley's land out there. It's called Hearthstone Manor of Milford. It's in the city of Milford. I went out there to look at that Saturday, and I swear to God, it was, I mean, for her, she's single. She's going through a divorce. And I looked at it, it's fine for her. But I looked there, and all these houses that's in this condo unit. And so I got there, I said, where do I park? In a place to park up and down her streets, all got numbers. Her number, she doesn't even have a number because she has two places. One's in her one-car garage, and the other one's in her driveway. And the home inspector was there in one, and she was in the garage. I said, now what are they going to, what in the world is the city of Milford going to do about this when they have to do this? And then all these people go in these two-bedroom, two-bath places that are they're not even as large as my smallest mobile homes in Silverview Farm. Gee whiz. I mean, two per bedroom was always a thing, and that makes sense. You know, I mean, if you got a big family, where do you go? You go somewhere else. Or, you know, you have to go and subsidize housing. My question is, I haven't had a chance to check it out, but Burton Village and Rehoboth and all them, how many does the state allow in there? I'd like to know. I'm going to find out. I'm going to go over there if I take something with me to protect myself. But I'm going over there and try to find out how many people are allowed to live in Burton Village or all this Section 8 housing. It wouldn't shock me if the states violate what their own stuff is right over here. It wouldn't shock me. So that's one of the solutions, is the grandfather in everybody that's on the books when you pass it, every new development that's subdivided, whether it's lots, whatever, put that, if you feel strongly about it, put that on it and tell the voluntary compliance agreement people that you've done something. And this is just one small part. This is number 7 on corrective actions and all the other stuff you're mandated to do on that other shotgun they shot you with. Now, so we need this to have a quality of life, a decent density, safety, and all the things that come into play in a community. And, I mean, you know, I don't think any of you live in a manufactured home community. And, you know, mine's a nice one. I got the biggest lots because I plan for the sewer. And I can put the biggest mobile home they build in there. I can put a 32 by 78 in there. And I just can see my park in years ahead going downhill, my development across the street going downhill. And I knew all that land when it was nothing but corn and soybeans, folks. It's something what we've come to. And it's a shame, and I sympathize with you, to get in this mess that the big brother has come down with their pen and their pencil on you. And I'm not going to get into, I know why it happened and how it happened, but I'm not going to get into that. The other thing is, I asked, sitting right there was Bob Wheatley. Robertson was sitting over there. I said, have they approved this? These people that were reporting back to, have they approved this? And Bob Wheatley, it's been on. He said, I've been on here for 20 years. I'm 53 years old, Mr. Truitt. I said, oh, congratulations. And then I found out he's running for councilman. I said, he turns his head over here to Vince like this, and Vince drops his head in prayer, and he don't know what to say. Have they all approved this?
You're implying he's a religious man?
I can't bring religion in this room. I know that. That's another thing. So then it comes back to Bob, and here's what possibly one of our future councilmen said. Listen to this. 53 years old, been there since he's 33. I'm 75. He says, Mr. Truitt, don't worry about this at all. It's all about nothing. You just go ahead and do everything like you've been doing it. That's what the planning and zoning people that some of you people were before you appointed over there, those five people. That's what he said. The other four sat there like mummies. They didn't say a word. All that was between was Vince Robertson and Bob Wheatley. It was just a one back and forth conversation. And I couldn't get, so I've never found out yet. Bob finally says, Mr. I said, what's the answer to that question? He wouldn't give an answer. He would finally says, Mr. Truitt, you'll never have an answer. That's Bob Wheatley, the chairman of your Planning and Zoning Commission. You'll never have an answer, Mr. Truitt. But he told me. It's on the record. It's on the record. So that's what he said. So you see where we're in this thing? So I say, grandfather it in, which I've said once, put, and whatever you put in, where are you going to get the money to enforce it? If you can't enforce rooming houses now that's on the code, if you can't enforce that and you won't spend the money to do that, and I appreciate how frugal the county is and all that, but I mean, I have to go through it and live by it, and all them foreign kids in there all over up and down the street with their bicycles, and you got to slow up for them, and they don't have helmets on. That's just one place. And in our 278 homes over there in Hill Beach Country Club, we have three houses that are in the category of rooming houses. But Wohar's, there's nothing like his. I mean, there's 20 that live in there all summer. And the county can't enforce it. They won't do anything. They just back off it, you know. Well, we got it, but it means nothing. Well, how are they going to enforce this? What is the county going to do? I mean, it's like Bob Wheatley says. Oh, well, just let it go through. Just put it through, and then, you know, just go ahead, Mr. Truitt, and do what you've done. Then I do it, and I'll be on the front page of the journal like I was about 10 years ago, which that case I beat with the Attorney General's Office of the State of Delaware. So if I can beat a small man like me can beat the Attorney General's Office of the State of Delaware, you people in the county, if you get the right attorneys and the right people, you get up and you get somebody that knows this, you can get some compromise on this, and you can have some of this stuff changed. Because if they're not going to put it all over, they're discriminating against Sussex County. That's what they're doing. So the summary, enforcement, and get some new legal counsel. Thank you very much for listening to me. Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
Did I leave out anything?
No, you didn't leave a thing out.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to speak?
My name is Dan Kramer. I've got a couple of questions. If I understand this correctly, all these years, manufactured housing was not considered dwellings, right? What's a manufactured housing? Including single wides, double wides, everything, right? Then how come were we paying taxes on them? If we were, what were we living in? Dog houses? Hog houses or what? But you want to charge us? And now the next question I have, is this going to allow single wides and double wides in any and all zoning districts?
I believe it will.
One good question there too. Mr. Robertson, you come forward.
It won't. And the reason being is that while manufactured homes, the dwelling definition now includes manufactured homes as a dwelling. Elsewhere throughout the code, it still talks about the separation of detached single-family dwellings versus manufactured homes. So, you know, like, for example, in a GR, that's a district you can have manufactured homes, because it specifically says manufactured homes there. In AR1, you can have single-family detached dwellings, but not manufactured homes unless it meets other criteria. So that really won't change. And on the tax issue also, we looked into that. This is for purposes of the zoning code, so taxation is not going to change as a result of this.
But the distinction between where we've permit single wides now in only certain areas, and
that won't change because I went through and I could go through it with you, but the code has not changed because this is the definition of dwelling. But then when you get into the individual zoning districts, it talks about both single family dwellings, or three things: single family dwellings, multifamily dwellings, and manufactured homes. So in certain districts you can have single family dwellings but not multifamily and not manufactured homes. In other districts you can have single family, multifamily, but not manufactured homes. And then, like, okay, in a GR district, you can have all three. So that
zoning still rules, is what you're saying. We
yes,
still have
that's
our
correct.
Zoning.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Sir?
Yes, good morning. I'm Jesse Garcia. I live in Millsboro, Delaware. And I live in manufactured housing. And I'm totally confused about the whole thing that's going on here. I thought that we were trying to change the definition of dwelling to include manufactured housing. Because if it's not the dwelling, what are we living in? We're governed by the housing rule. We're taxed, although we're taxed separately. We're outside of the normal tax structure. So if we're not a dwelling, what are we? That's all I have.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Sir?
Afternoon, Council. Morning, still, sorry.
Yeah, it's still morning.
Almost there.
Mm-hmm. Rushing the day away. Anthony Bruce Wright, First State Community Action Agency. In the absence of Bernice Edwards, we are a certified fair housing agency in the state of Delaware. I was listening to the webcast when one of our residents started, and felt the need to come over and say a few things. But I think it can be said in one statement. Quite frankly, I applaud what council has been doing and what administration's been doing to ensure fair housing within our county. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Robertson, there was a question raised by Mr. Garcia. And he asked if he said he lived in a manufactured home and is confused by this. And if it's not a dwelling, what is it? Can you address that?
Actually, I wish Mr. Wright were still here because there's building code elements of it as well. For purposes of the zoning code, as I said, there was a distinction that really didn't make a lot of sense in the definition of dwelling. It said, you know, dwellings, all these things, but not a manufactured home, not a motor hotel. I think they called it a hotel, a rooming house. And you went through that, and it didn't track really any purpose throughout the code, except for the one place, which I'm quite certain was unintended, because in my legal opinion, the intent of a manufactured home is the same as a stick-built home. It's a dwelling where somebody lives. So the only thing that made that really significant in our zoning code was when he got to campgrounds, in that there was a definition, a requirement that you have this separation district from campsites to dwellings. And one of the applicants went back and looked at what dwelling said, and they were surrounded by manufactured housing, and thought, well, I don't have to do that separation because these are under the code as it previously existed, manufactured homes and not dwellings. And so that was, I wasn't around when that was adopted, but I imagine that when that was put in, that separation requirement, whoever drafted it thought that a dwelling was a dwelling was a dwelling, and there wasn't a distinction for manufactured homes. So, you know, beyond that, I don't know really in terms of the zoning code now what the difference will be. A manufactured home is a dwelling. However, it's still subject to the requirements that exist elsewhere in our zoning code, the appropriate districts for manufactured homes and that sort of thing. That was a long sort of roundabout question. But
maybe I don't understand. I'm reading dwelling, multifamily, and family are being revised to allow more than four unrelated individuals to reside together and affirmatively address protected classes of persons. If I were a landlord and I have a house with two bedrooms and I want to limit it to two people, is this saying that I can't do that?
No, and that was, and I was trying to understand and listen to what Mr. Truitt was stating, you know, and kind of the irony of it is it seems as though he's asked for more regulation from the county on who can do what, where, and how in a house or in a subdivision, when really what you look at this ordinance and it really is a little bit less regulation than what we previously had, because it opens it up to greater groups of people. But what it does do, and it's something that I think that the county has really promoted, was individual, you know, companies or property owners to decide what it is they want to do with their property. So if you have a manufactured home park, you can create still your own rules and regulations about, you know, the standards of the homes or who can live there or whatever. I would just caution you that you still need to do it in terms of what is legal under fair housing. And manufactured home parks are still subject to the conditional use process that we have in the county. If you have a condominium, you can create your own declaration and rules that govern the number of people in your condominium. Same thing with the subdivision. DENRAC can still create its own rules regarding septics. The Division of Human Relations, or the state agency that regulates group homes, they can still create their own licensing requirement for group homes. So we're actually kind of taking what was a fairly narrow definition and making it a little more broad and allowing other people to make their own rules on their own individual property. So that Mr. Truitt's point, he's not required to do anything on his property. We're saying that you can do these certain things, or you have to allow these groups to reside in a dwelling, but he can still make his own rules. Nobody's saying that his mobile home park or manufactured home park or such and such a subdivision can't make their own rules.
If four people came to me and wanted to rent that house, and I said, we are looking for two folks, and we feel like it's a small house, can we be cited for discriminating against two of those people?
Well, I don't want to. My job is to advise the county, not individual landlords.
Well, I don't know what this thing does then.
Well, it simply states if you have a single-family dwelling, that those classes of people can reside in it.
They can reside in it, but doesn't mean I have to let, because I can have my own rules.
You can have your own rules. You're still going to be under the umbrella of whatever the federal laws are and the state laws for renting to whomever. But in terms of the county, what we're saying is, if you want to, you can rent to these.
Well, you've still got the federal laws.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to rent it, use it as a group home, I guess you have to say yes. Because doesn't that, you can't, it's a protected group?
He didn't
group
say
home?
Does federal law say that?
Well, again, the federal law is more, it protects against discrimination against protected classes. So you can't treat folks with disabilities different than you could with anybody else, or any other.
So as long as you limit it to four people, it could be a four-person group home. And it's a family now. Right.
Yeah, and there's still no limit. If the size of the home, there's all number of criteria that can come into play. I'm not going to try to predict all the different scenarios, right? The septic, capacity, that type of thing.
Yeah, this just amends definitions.
Yeah,
it doesn't amend parts of the code.
Because we were required to do that because it's sort of like bringing it up to date. And coinciding with what fair housing is asking.
State and federal.
State and federal. Okay.
Where some dwellings are treated different. Some says you had single wide has to have 5 acres, and right. double wide, same.
And those provisions of the code are still in there.
Still a manufactured home.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Still, one can have 3/4 acres, so. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else before we close the public hearing? Well, sir?
Oh, guys, I got confused about this. Paul Rigger.
You have a sign in, please, sir.
So basically,
you have to state your name too.
Paul Rigger. So basically, then a single wide, a 12 by 50 single wide, and a 12 by 24 double wide. Because I kept hearing the manufactured. It's not going to be based on square footage for a single wide to get the mobile homes all on the same playing field. The dwelling is a dwelling. It's not going to be on that. It's still going to be singles or singles, doubles or doubles. You're still treated differently.
It's just
that nature.
It's just defining what a dwelling is. It's not saying that, you know, it's not affecting what a manufactured home is according to manufacturer standards or industry okay. standards.
Because just with different zoning things and a lot of the open-ended definitions in the code. And also, too, with all the residences concerning the family size and the other end, and like, you know, I have a lot of problems with codes having open-ended on them. With issues that I'm dealing with, it depends on who's going where with it, what side you're on. But as far as like with the county for the building department, I don't know whether this is the same as a lot of other building codes, but I would think that a lot of these rooming houses and stuff like that, I would think that the building and zoning department would have control over the amount of people in it by the bedroom. I mean, I don't know whether you consider a bedroom just an extra room or if it just has a closet in it. I mean, can a person build a bigger house and just leave 4 10-by-10 rooms without closets and just say the regular rooms, and then people come in and move in. You beat your septic system requirements, you still have more people coming in because they're not technically a bedroom. Maybe you could make it to give your county zoning the power to classify a room as a bedroom even if it doesn't have a closet.
Any construction still has to comply with the building code.
Yes, but there's a lot of ways around that. By if you're building a 5-bedroom house, you technically claim it's a 3-bedroom by just not putting 2 closets in 2 of the rooms. And everybody knows that they would be considered bedrooms. It's just something where your zoning closed some of the loopholes, and everything would be great.
Okay, thank you. Anything further or anyone else? Seeing none, this closes the public hearing session.
Mr. Cole has a question.
Just for David. David, is it possible, there were some questions raised with all we've heard, separating the family definition from the dwelling definition, there was a suggestion that we separate the two. Is so basically, I don't know, to have two separate resolutions or ordinances. The other one was, the question was about the grandfather issue. Is there any potential that do we have the ability to do grandfathering in an ordinance such as this?
Frankly, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at
okay,
that.
Those are a couple of questions. I was just wondering and Todd, are we under any kind of a time frame with this at this point?
We are not, no.
Okay, all right. But those two things, I think, are interesting questions that we should maybe hear about.
Yeah. Just on the time frame, we do have to report, you know, the efforts that we're making on a variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a specific deadline that I'm aware of.
Well,
on the grandfathering.
I've had a lot of questions about the dwelling and manufactured
yeah,
home.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know it's
from
an issue.
People
that,
who live in them, so.
Right,
yeah.
But that's on everybody's mind. On the grandfathering, and I think Mr. Phillips asked that question, or maybe was appreciative of Mr. Truitt's suggestion. You know, on some sense, I think you could say that makes sense. The problem, though, is that in an existing development, for example, if somebody wanted to do a group home, that fell under the categories, we still can't discriminate, you know, so you can't say, well, it's an existing, so we're going to treat people differently in this existing development than we would in a new development. I think we still run afoul of that if we were to grandfather, you know, the existing developments or existing structures, et cetera. I think we still run into enforcement issues under federal law on that, so or state law for that matter, because that's under Delaware code, that requirement.
Well, isn't it almost impossible to change grandfather laws anyway? When if you're already under that law, isn't it possible to come back and change that?
No, I think you could change it. It's difficult. Is it impossible? No, it's difficult. But in this type of scenario, it would be a new use. So, you know, you have an existing development, an existing house. And what you would, I think if I understood what Mr. Truitt was saying, well, if it's an existing development, that development should go forward under the old way, you know, where you theoretically couldn't have group homes. The problem is if somebody came in and wanted to do a group home, they still have to comply with what's the current state and federal laws. So in that situation, I don't think we can grandfather it. Because still, it's something new.
But they're still good under the old law. You can't go and say that old law said it was allowed to have, just for instance, we'll just use something silly. Say three people per bedroom, but the new law comes out and says it can't have but two. We can't go back and say, hey, you people can't have no more three here. We got to go back to two. That law stays there. The new law takes place.
That's true, but at the same time, I don't think that we could require or establish something that is grandfathered that is also discriminatory.
Well, that would be, yeah. But that is grandfathered, and that's understandable. When they went into that building, they knew that was a law, and the code, whatever you want to call it. But now we don't have the right to go back and change that code, but we can from forward on. Seems to me, isn't that right, Mr. Rutt?
Yeah, the grandfathering is it's an issue that you have to look at the use of the property. But point Mr. Robertson touched on, you can't continue to enforce a law that is no longer proper or valid under, say, federal law or state law. If, you know, and you're looking at a discrimination issue, and if you had a law in the books that said in the county, you know, we will discriminate on the basis of X, but that's stricken by the federal law government, the county can't still enforce that. So, you know, there's, you know, I this grandfathering, we have to look at that in terms of what this is requesting.
Can't grandfather prejudice.
Yeah, you can't grandfather discriminatory action.
Okay. If we leave some questions on the table, should we keep the record open? Is that a good? That's a question I'd like to meet, because it seems like Sam and a couple of us have some questions, and we've had to absorb a lot here today. How should we proceed? What's the best way to proceed?
Well, I you close the public record, but you can defer voting on this.
Okay, and we can still get staff input, different things, because sometimes we close the public record. I don't want to get to a point where we're not allowed to listen or talk to anybody, because this may generate some interest in the next week or so, and we might get some other input. So I'd like to just, I don't think this is something we need to close the record on. I would actually suggest we leave the record open a little bit for any backlash, comments, positive or, you know, negative.
I mean, could we continue the public hearing in 2 weeks?
This is for the backlash here.
Time there could be additional commentary that comes to us in writing, or the public may come in 2 weeks with additional information. It is a pretty significant issue.
You can hold the record open for purposes of receipt of, say, if you had comments from the state. You know, let's say this was a zoning issue, you know, for receipt of comments from DLDOT. Or if you had something specific that you wanted someone to address. But to just hold the public record open for
what
general comments, I wouldn't suggest doing that. As far as keeping it open for staff comments, you can do that.
Cole? No, it's just hard to wrap. We've heard a lot today, and I'm just saying it's hard to wrap your arms around something like this, and it doesn't seem to be something that's, you know, like I said, there's a drop dead deadline on this, and I'd rather, you know, we all get a chance to think this through, so we don't shoot from the hip and make another mistake, or we shoot from the hip and maybe go too far, so maybe there's a nice sweet spot in the middle there that we can find, and I just, like I said, I would, Mr. Truitt, threw a lot of stuff on the table.
But
and, you know, the others, and Vince. I mean, everybody's kind of, the input is kind of confusing, and to sort it all out, and like I said, a couple questions about maybe separating some of these definitions, these other things that maybe all of us could think about a little bit. And I don't want to keep, you know, any new information from reaching me that might be helpful in a coming to a decision.
I mean, could we make a motion to recess the public hearing?
Well, I'm asking.
For 2 weeks.
I don't look like an attorney, do I?
Mr. Rutt, you were saying we shouldn't do that.
Turn your head. It's up to you. My advice would be not to.
Mm-hmm. Our attorney advice, okay.
I'm not buying the reasoning. It's just you're not comfortable with it, yet the public may have some very significant additional commentary in 2 weeks.
I think that Mr. Wheatley was right when he said to Mr. Truitt, you can go ahead and do what you're doing now, and it does not affect what you're doing. So,
I wouldn't take that to the bank.
It doesn't affect your, you have your rules and regulations. You can still have that for renting, right? For number of people per unit. No?
No, I'm just listening to you, what you're saying.
Well, I'm just surmising that it sounds to me like if I were a landlord, I'm not changing my rules and regulations because of this. We're simply housekeeping to comply with fair housing and taking care of the dwelling issue with a manufactured home park. I don't see any problem.
Does anyone have a motion yet?
Well, let me ask a question. Are you suggesting that you keep the record open for 2 weeks so that people can come back in 2 weeks and make further comment?
That's apparently what they want to do, yeah.
I mean, that's what you wish to do. You can do that.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
What is the motion?
Leave the hearing open for 2 weeks to receive more information.
Okay.
From whom?
From whoever wants to.
Is it to leave it open for further public comment or to receive information from staff? You know,
all the above.
Yep.
Staff and public comment. I think I actually think that this may generate some interest out there if it's put in the paper in a proper format that raises some issues.
Absolutely.
And I think it's something that we want to make sure that we think through properly. So, like I said, we get it right. It's a you know, we've gotten in trouble before sometimes moving too quickly or something. But I think it's important to just get additional comment. I'm never afraid of having people give me more advice, whether I take it or not. That's a different story. But
I'm seconding the motion, which I understood to be recessing the public hearing for 2 weeks, at which time it'll be placed on the agenda. And the president will receive a motion to reopen the public hearing, and that will be voted on by council at that time, and if we have a majority, then we'll reopen it and hopefully finish it.
Well, that's not what the motion is. The motion is to just recess, not to vote on it again and reopen, because you're not closing it under
the
motion.
So the president has the authority to bring it out of recess? I thought when we recess to another venue, typically the president, it's a motion to come out of recess.
Let's just leave the public hearing open for a period of 2 weeks for additional staff and public comment. Sounds good.
Now, to leave it, I want to make sure you do this right.
Okay, right.
To leave it open so that in 2 weeks, it will be back on the agenda for people to make whatever additional comments they wish to make and for council to receive any further input from staff.
Yes.
Okay.
Which includes any written comments in the next 2 weeks could also come in.
Yes.
Okay, may I say something? If we're thinking about challenging HUD and Department of Justice on their proper wording, I'm not for that. Because I heard Mr. Truitt talk about that. We should get a lawyer, and we're being singled out. And that, I don't go along with that.
Okay, but right now the motion is just to leave this record open.
But for what purpose?
For 2 weeks,
to leave the public
hearing open for 2 weeks.
to be put back on the agenda in 2 weeks for receipt of further public comment and staff input.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying if it's for that.
Well, that's the motion.
No, if it's for challenging.
No. This is to allow time for more comments.
That's the motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. It simply allows time for more comment from the public and your staff. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
All right.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Robertson. I guess we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Lawyers, do we need?
Grant request. Mrs. Jennings.
Good afternoon. Mr. President, members of council, I have one grant for your consideration. It's the Indian River High School Band Boosters. They're requesting $5,000 to help with the cost of a trip for the band. Annual performances and trips are a learning experience for these band students. Last grant received was $3,500, which was $500 for Mr. Cole, $500 for Mr. Wilson, and $2,500 for Mr. Phillips.
The request again was for how much?
$5,000.
I bet if we give $500 each.
From
Mr. Phillips and myself.
Well, that's fine, yeah. I'll second the motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second Mr. Phillips to grant $1,000 to the Indian High School Band Boosters for a fundraiser, being $500 from Mr. Cole's council bank account and $500 from Phillips' council bank account. Questions on the motion?
It's to go to Disney World.
Or wherever. It's a fundraiser, okay. We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
No.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I believe the motion carried. Introduction proposed zoning ordinances. Mr. Rutt.
There are none to be introduced.
Yeah, we have.
Wow.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Items brought before council. Here comes Mr. Guy. Coming down the aisle. We might have Drew Carey a little bit. Okay. Mr. Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. You had a, this morning you had a director in here from the economic developer. I want to know what her wages are, her salary. And it's required to be broadcast at the time you hire it. It's called FOIA. Now, if you wanted me to FOIA it, I'll FOIA it to the Attorney General. You can either say it loudly or it doesn't matter. I can do either one.
Mr. Walsh, no? Okay. Entertain a motion to go into recess until 1:30 for public hearings.
All right. Me.
Second.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver. Mm-hmm. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wolf.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We're now in recess until 1:30.